All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
No, that sounded sort of like a question, almost a whine. I don't know. Maybe that's the right tone for this episode. I actually don't think this is going to be a difficult episode for me. Like, I feel like I should say it's going to be a difficult episode. It's going to be fairly straightforward. It's episode 6, whatever. Leave me alone. And we need to talk about Kyle. So I promised, I don't even know if I said this on AG Classic, but I certainly said it on social, that my intention, because the last couple weeks have been kind of crazy, and certainly there's been a focus on New York, understandably so, when you think about the subject at hand and just whatever, not going down that path, but I feel like New York and Salt Lake City have been ever so slightly lost in the shuffle, even though the most recent episode of AG Classic was like 18 hours long. God bless. It was truly one of my favorites of the year. And we are only now in February. And that's going to hold strong through 12/31. And there are also a bunch of episodes up on the AG Patreon, a live reaction to Atlanta, a two-part Satchel Spectacular. I did a Reading Rainbow deep dive of Uba's Glamour interview and unpacked many of your Satchels of Gold about New York, really focusing on getting into AG reaction to all things New York. But as a result, I'm like, I just need to take it. I know I always say this and then it never is, but I really genuinely do think this is going to be a mini episode because I just kind of wanted to say for the historic record of all things Clawfist, just like a couple things. And I've rewatched the last two episodes of Beverly Hills because I just kind of wanted to jog my memory of all things Kyle, even though I think I have a pretty good idea of how I feel. And I do want to sidebar before I get into that. I'm like a little out of it right now because I just watched, I swear to God, like 17,000 episodes of Potomac. I'm now in the middle of episode 15. So I'm right toward the tail end of the season. I'm catching up as I promised I would. And it kind of hit me because I thought to myself, like, should I do a Potomac catch-up episode? But I have to tell you, to be completely honest, I don't really know what happened this season, which is kind of wild when you consider just how many episodes of Potomac I've seen in the last several days, most especially today. I'm not quite sure what to say about Potomac. Maybe I'll have more insight after watching the finale, even though I'm essentially, I think the finale is episode 17. I'm like an episode and a half away from that. So I don't know if that's going to kind of change things. My hot take about Potomac is like, I don't understand what's going on with Mia, that whole situation with like Mia, Gordon, Inc., and I guess now Jacqueline is just very confusing, disconcerting. It feels like it's too much. It feels just really sad and confusing and strange. Like, that's the number one. Number two, on a totally different note, Dr. Wendy having absolutely by far her best season. I think she is like the light of the season so far. She makes a lot of practical sense. I also think when she's sharing her thoughts and feels about what's going on around her, I also think she's like genuinely a lot of fun this season. She's made me laugh a bunch. Her reactions have made me laugh a bunch. sort of along those same lines. Giselle has had a comeback season, not as strong as Dr. Wendy's, just for me personally, but I'm like, thank God we're back to like some semblance of Giselle where she's actually enjoyable. Like, I'm enjoying her. She's entertaining to me. I appreciate that a lot. And then the Karen of it all is just like, it's, I don't want to call it a nothing burger, but it's, she's so off the mark of where I would expect her to be just in her own basic like reasoning and life at this point, that it feels like when we're talking about Karen, it's kind of like dragging down the cast in a way that I really, really didn't anticipate, that I find honestly really kind of sad. And the trailer for the Potomac reunion, I think was great. Like, I was like, oh, this looks good. I don't know how many parts it's going to be. If they told us, I forgot. I assume it will be two. That could be completely wrong. But it made me even more interested in catching up as quickly as possible, because I do want to get into the reunion live as it happens, which I absolutely will be. Like, I'll be done with Potomac. I mean, I'm recording this late at night on Monday. I'll be done with Potomac, I swear to God, by like the end of the night. And I'm sort of half asleep at this point because I have been so deep into Potomac. So hopefully a Potomac catch-up episode is coming. I did want to just get into the last two episodes of Beverly Hills, which I do think have centered around Kyle and Dorit. But even Dorit is like in association with Kyle. And also note that part three of Salt Lake City is this week, and I have a lot to say that I haven't necessarily said in full, especially about Bronwyn and Lisa. So I am hoping to drop that Wednesday before part three airs, because it really, Salt Lake City deserves the kind of attention that it has. It's going to be one of those weird kind of like, not ironies, but just one of those odd moments where, because of everything that's kind of been going on in the Bravo sphere, Salt Lake City might be something that's like focused on like in the next week when it's technically over, because there's more time to kind of unpack it, which isn't ideal, but it's at least something. So, you know, life happens and we try to catch up the best we can. Do the best with what we have while we have it. So, listen, we need to talk about Kyle. So when people ask me, oftentimes with confusion or surprise, about why Kyle is in my top five, I don't have a great answer. So I do the fallback, like kind of LOL, but actually quite literally not an LOL of like, she has a German Shepherd, and my shout out Kirby, Gigi Galley, my childhood German Shepherd, love of my life. Like, there's obviously a lot of reasons why I or anyone could fall in love with Kyle or love Kyle. I know that she is, maybe has become, or maybe has always been, which I get, you know, if you think about the season finale of season one, a divisive housewife figure. But I have always felt connected to her, attached to her. She, to me, has been like an easy person, an easy housewife, an easy housewife archetype, LOL, to fall in love with and to connect with. And I think I found it really helpful because she's not an alpha housewife. So for me, the pressure on her to deliver, or maybe the little bit of the gamble of like being a huge personality and that maybe coming with huge backlash, hasn't necessarily been like her little basket when it comes to being on Housewives. She, to me, is a solid ensemble member, which is also a great way to guarantee career longevity in these franchises where it can be extraordinarily difficult to be an OG hanging on after 5, 10, and now we're like 14 plus seasons, whatever fucking season Beverly Hills is on, and I never pay attention to the numbers, so apologies. Much like filming schedules and which production company produces what. Like, that's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't, you tell me, and I'm like, all right, we're at 34. That makes sense. That feels apropos. 10 years longer than I've been alive. I'm gonna nod and say amen. So with Kyle, I think a lot of it, too, has to deal with the complicated nature of her relationships with her sisters. That kind of has been almost over-discussed at this point, but it is a little bit of like the connective thread of Beverly Hills. When you think about some of the darker aspects of Beverly Hills, there's something sort of oddly ironic about this structure. And maybe this was sort of predestined about the structure of Beverly Hills, where it is the she, diamonds and rosé, but there always has been a darkness. And so too, when you think of the world of Hollywood and the lights and the glamour, the knowledge that there's a lot of darkness behind that industry as well, the industry of performance, you know, and production. There's a lot that happens behind the glitz and the glam. There is often, unfortunately, or there can be a pretty big cost to the glamour and the celebrity that we've seen, a lot of sacrifice. And so when I think of Beverly Hills, that kind of through line and that foundation of like, there's been some like really dark, intense, serious shit that's happened on BH. A person wouldn't necessarily expect that when you think of the luxury, the money, the celebrity connections, whatever amount of distance there is. I could reference Lisa Rinna, but that feels like a compliment to her, so I will not. There's a lot going on in Beverly Hills under the surface. And you don't really need to say that about other franchises. Like, I mean, I guess I don't know why I'm thinking about New Jersey, because there's been so much. It's been so deep and so heavy in New Jersey. But a lot of that has been connected with family versus just kind of like the environment of Beverly Hills. There's always been something cooking underneath. And what's interesting to me about this season is it doesn't feel as heavy as it has been. And sometimes it's gone way too heavy, way too much, where we're dealing with stuff that's just too big for this franchise and this universe, a la Tom Girardi being a master criminal, bankrupting orphans and widows worldwide. Like, he is a like nightmare, evil, awful person. That popped the bubble even of the Housewives franchise because it was such a huge fucking crime. It is also, just sidebar, just a continuing, not even an LOL, but like an Erica, what are you doing? When she references, because how could you not? She's been married to a very famous trial lawyer for over 20 years. When she says things just kind of like offhand of how Tom taught me stuff, so of course I don't want to see a text message without a subpoena or show me the evidence. And I'm just thinking, like, babe, you're still at the heart of so many examples of pending litigation. Maybe we should say less about what Tom has taught you right now and for the near future, meaning like the next 10 to 15. Maybe that's not a great thing. But overall, I mean, Erica's had a remarkably good season so far. There has been a feeling of light. And even when I think of the conflict right now, the major conflict, you know, we're getting into like some pretty like important, intense conversation about the nature, if you really want to dig in, about like Dorit and PK, stuff that she is bringing to light about the nature of their relationship that is, frankly, we're kind of like catching up at this point, but it's stuff that people have questioned for a while. Even when you think of the last reunion where she's like, we're better than ever, and the cast is exchanging glances because everyone knows that they're not. She's catching up on lost time and I think really trying to prove herself and saying, listen, I'm showing you all the scars. I'm like opening up the closet of skeletons. Like, there's a lot that I haven't talked about, and now I'm talking about it all. Almost a sense of like freedom and urgency in Dorit. So I don't mean to diminish what she's experiencing, for example, and we've talked about other things too, but there's something almost not like freeing, but there's just something that feels kind of like a nice little glide, to me at least, about this season of Beverly Hills, where I don't feel like I need to like sacrifice major morality when I'm trying to figure out a way to survive Erica Jayne, as I have in seasons past, where she's drunkenly screaming about not caring about anyone else but me. You know, those are some tough moments. And I'm like, what am I actually supporting here? What am I bearing witness to? Can I please not do that right now? With this season, I kind of feel like, you know what, there's something, it's not the kind of season that you're going to write home about. You know what I'm saying? But it's, to me, okay. Sometimes Beverly Hills operates at a whisper that everyone's pretending is a scream. And sometimes there is some kind of just like underlying stuff, like Sutton intentionally trying to provoke Kyle and other people throughout the episodes and then not understand that people have the absolute right to come back at her. Like, talk about throwing stones at glass houses. Like, Sutton is a big glass mega fucking mansion, and you just need to like half toss a pebble her way and that shit is going to break the fuck down. Which I just rewatched the mid-season trailer and I'm like, oh, that's gonna be happening. She's like throwing a headband or something in frustration at Dorit. Like, more of that, please. Yes, I love a hair accessory in the middle of someone going mad. So it hasn't necessarily been like the kind of season, again, that you celebrate. It's not Salt Lake City, and it's not so bad that you're potentially losing your mind. I do think there's some stuff here to unpack, but to me, I think the reason that this sort of huge kind of cast turn or shifting energies, the reason it's not landing in the way that it has been when the cast is kind of turned against other cast members, like LVP, for example, is because we're dealing with Kyle. Kyle was never an alpha cast member. I mean this in the nicest possible way. Like, I don't think of Kyle as a star. She's in my top five. I really enjoy watching Kyle on the show, and I appreciate Kyle. But she's not the kind of person who's like going to bring down the ship when she's going down with it. And I say that noting that I think about Kyle's like referenced on one of those two most recent episodes, essentially saying like, if you guys fuck with me, I'm going to walk. And also in confessional saying, in essence, I don't know if I can do the show anymore. It's like, it's too challenging. I'm too upset. It's not worth it. I want to walk away. And I would miss her if she went. I don't know what the ensemble currently looks like without her. But I also feel like that's not a, because I do think she provides value. I think she's someone you would miss if she was gone, even if she was being used as like a metaphorical punching bag where it's like, oh, I love to hate Kyle. I don't personally, but I could understand someone really strongly disliking Kyle. I have no issue with that. I have no issue with anybody strongly disliking anybody in my top five. I'm not like precious about anyone. I obviously am obsessed with Shan, but Shan comes with such a long list of reasons for people to have a potentially negative opinion of her behavior on the show that it's like, it's part of the charm for me at this point. Is like, Shan stands, we get it. We're in on the joke. But with Kyle, I do think that we would be missing something without her. She doesn't stand out in the way that alpha, superstar, like star franchise players do, but she does bring value and history that no one else in the cast has, and that would be missed if she was gone. And I don't know, I feel like the cast in and of itself would need someone else that feels like they have some sort of gravitas, but it also has to be specific to the Housewives universe. So I don't think like bringing in another celebrity is a good idea. I can't totally imagine the franchise without her, but I also have to say at this point, if she is telling us she needs to move on, then she should move the fuck on.
Investing can sometimes feel overwhelming, with all the fancy jargon that makes it seem more complicated than it really is. Maybe all those finance bros just want another thing they can try and mansplain. Well, Acorns believes that anyone can be an investor. That's why they make it so easy to stick to basic, time-tested principles that give your money a chance to grow. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. Investing, for me, felt like something I couldn't start without a substantial amount of money on hand. That's why Acorns is so important. Acorns makes it easy for everyone to start investing today. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. After the holiday hustle, which I spiritually celebrated at Bluestone Manor, there's nothing like giving your home a little TLC. For me, my decor style is very different throughout my apartment. My living room is really kind of chill, and the clawfis is bright and colorful and fun. And thanks to Wayfair, I was able to find incredible pieces that worked with each individual space in my home. My lighting fixture, which is beautiful, gold, modern, and my air conditioner, necessary when I'm recording an episode where I mention Chris Manzo, is from Wayfair as well. Both of those serve a purpose, but they also look great. I was surprised when I went on Wayfair to see so many necessities, as well as beautiful pieces, lighting, closet organization, spring accents, and more. There's something for every style in every home, no matter your space or budget. Wayfair makes it easy to tackle your New Year's home goals with endless inspiration. They have free and easy delivery, even on the big stuff. Give your home the refresh it needs with Wayfair. Head to wayfair.com right now. That's WAYFAIR.com. Wayfair. Every style, every home.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
And her... the edit... it wasn't a Brynn edit. It wasn't what I personally do sometimes with Bronn when I'm like thinking of the edit of other things she said before this like newest thing she says that's diametrically opposed. But there was a little bit of a supporting edit against Kyle that I really appreciated in these two most recent episodes. Like the flashback to the Denise Richards of it all, it's such an easy thing to reference because I think it's 1000% applicable. But Kyle deciding, like, if this is the worst season of Kyle's time on Housewives, then she's so fucking privileged because she brought this all on herself. You can argue that there have been other housewives who have been hashtag systematically bullied or challenged because of things that they didn't control, because of things that they didn't introduce into the housewives world that somebody else discovered that were used against them. That has happened time and time again on Beverly Hills and beyond. With Kyle, this most recent, you know, kerfuffle is entirely her doing. So there is something especially comical about watching her revolt against cast members just simply reacting to things that she has introduced Well, she's saying they're either conspiring against her, immature, doing things that crosses the line of housewives participation. She's defining the housewives universe as something very different from what it has arguably always been, where there is someone who is unfortunately sacrificed. The irony to me is like, Kyle was trying to do that, I guess, to Dorit, and then everything kind of turned. So her behavior at the, what was it, Serenity Spa? Some kind of Serenity, Sisterhood Serenity Soiree. Love it. Iconic. I love a title. I love an afternoon that's been branded. And Bose, to me, is having one of those fucking seasons that you see so infrequently because it's so hard to bring in a first season housewife into an obviously well already settled franchise when there have been so many bad one and dones. I think it's very hard to join Beverly Hills. I think it's very hard to join Orange County. I would argue it might actually genuinely be easier on Rest in Peace, May Its Memory Be a Blessing, I guess, until we find out about casting in about 6 years, New Jersey, than it is on, I don't know, those West Coast franchises. I'm just like, fuck, man, it can be really hard to find organic chemistry. They've done it really successfully on Orange County. I think Katie was excellent casting. I think Jen was excellent casting. I'm obviously curious what will happen with Gretchen being added to the mix. She might flop. Even if she does flop, am I hoping that she flops? I'm hoping for great TV, so I don't really care if she like brings value or not, because I have such faith in that core ensemble that I'm like, they're going to figure out a way to like mock her and make it work great for us. So I have full faith in what's happening. What Bose has done in being so fully herself is arguably like one of the best first season performances of any franchise in recent Housewives memory. And it's a rare thing to do. And the thing that I find especially powerful is I think a lot of the reason that I love Bose and I love watching Bose is because I just genuinely gut instinct believe everything that she's saying. She is commanding. She is succinct. She doesn't fuck around. She gets exactly to the point. She doesn't need to be, I don't feel like if she's ever dismissive of someone, there's a reason to be dismissive of that person. She doesn't feel in any way cruel, which is great for her and great for us, because I think it's going to be harder for people, and by people, I mean, I think probably only Kyle, to try to come back at her at any points, because I think she could argue successfully, so absolutely, I'm just being honest. And her honesty doesn't come at the cost of like an all-over humanity. I feel her fully when she's saying things. And I think that's really important because she has done this thing so well that is so hard to do, which is to call Kyle on her shit and not turn that into some sort of Kyle victimhood complex, which Kyle is trying to do, but very, very unsuccessfully. And she's crossed a couple lines in saying things during confessionals where I've genuinely gasped because I'm like, oh, Kyle, that is so shitty what you're doing right now. And you're doing it because you think that you're coming from behind a position that you've been in before, where there can be an argument if it was with, you know, versus Kathy, versus Kim for different reasons, certainly to me versus LVP, and they've gone up and down over and over again, versus other people in the cast as well, where I can find the argument that she's a little bit of an underdog, but you cannot make that argument anymore because of the history and power that she has on the show and in this universe, and because she did this to herself. The introduction of the text message, the refusal repeatedly as a form of power or bitchiness or whatever to be like, well, I'm not showing it to Dorit, but I'm showing it to three other people in the cast that I would like to join me in turning against Dorit, or at least I would like to extend this kind of like scoop example I have that will support the case that what was the initial inciting incident as far as why she revealed the text at Chuck E. Cheese, which is one of those things like talking about what happened with high body count hair at Meredith's bat mitzvah, where you just, in giving a sentence to share the environment, I just instinctively laugh. So to say like the argument against this text message, which was initially shared at Chuck E. Cheese because Erica wanted a divorce pizza party. Where are we? I love this world. I really, truly love this world. But the thing to me that's so tough is Kyle is making like bad decisions that feel inherently, I don't know if you could say craven, certainly selfish or at least unsuccessful. And she's trying to make that work. And I don't know why, but there was this like phrase that occurred to me and it doesn't make any sense. So I just want to say that up front. This does not make any sense. And now I'm trying to remember it. She Vander jumped the shark. I don't know why that made sense to me when I was thinking about this the 19 times that I've watched the two most recent episodes, but there's something about, I can't directly compare and like equalize Kyle and Lisa Vanderpump. It's not fair, honestly, to Lisa Vanderpump. And it's also not fair to Kyle. Like they're just very different people. I would argue Lisa's much more strategic and was successful. She was just operating at a higher kind of level than a lot of other people. And yeah, did some producing behind the scenes and was manipulative and also honestly delivered for a number of seasons until she didn't. And then unfortunately left the show. Although I think it was for the best. But do I think that there's a future for Lisa on BH? I actually honestly do. Depends on what will happen with Vanderpump Rules 2.0, I guess. And LOL The Valley, which she absolutely doesn't watch. So I think that with Kyle, for whatever reason, I just feel like this might be a sign of senioritis, like when you're a senior in high school and you no longer want to do your homework because you're above it all, because you got a 1430 or whatever on your SAT. Is that even good? I don't remember. 1520, whatever the fuck it was. LOL, me thinking I was in the universe of a 1520, my SATs. I did spell my name right, and that we were always told counted for an awful lot. Shout out Kaplan. I feel like Kyle at this point, I don't know if it is genuinely exhaustion. I don't know if it is a sign that she's really, truly tired. I don't know if she just feels like I've done this for so long, people are never supposed to come for me. Or maybe it's oddly enough easier when the person coming for her is like a family member because they've been doing that their whole lives, where she feels like in some way I'm sort of above it when it comes to the rest of the cast. I'm not going to play dirty, but it's only dirty when it's against her. It feels like the mistakes that she's made are so obvious that I genuinely do not think I have agreed with a single thing that she has said or done this season, because it's just, it feels so deeply transparent, ironically, that it's not entirely real. Like, that's the thing that's maybe the most fascinating for me, is I actually think, and this is a very strange thing for me to say when Dorit is still on the show, but I actually think what Kyle is doing is more manufactured than anyone else. I guess runner-up for that would be Sutton, who's always like a little bit of a mess, which is nice because she's just so rich that it's good to know she's a pickle. You know what I'm saying? With Kyle, just the decisions that she's made, and again, this kind of perpetual victimhood, it just doesn't work, especially because at the end of the day, you're talking about a woman's separation and marriage with her now estranged spouse. Kyle feeling like she's somehow the person. Obviously, Kyle and Mauricio are going through their own thing, but it is to me fascinating the ways that Kyle and honestly Erica don't give Dorit the same grace that they
absolutely send Kyle's way in spades. Like, everything that Erica says about Kyle to Dorit, she should be saying to Kyle about Dorit. Did I say that correctly? Like, when Erica and Dorit are talking and Erica's like, you know, we need to give Kyle some grace, I don't totally remember her doing that with Kyle, which is not great. It does also kind of beg the question, like, is Erica afraid of Kyle? Is saying that, as Dorit did so loudly and clearly, I'm sure that's something that Erica wasn't thrilled to hear, that will absolutely frame some aspect of the reunion. But is it entirely wrong? Like, there's something going on here where everyone in the cast seems to be watching the same show. And I think Erica is too, but doesn't want to admit it. Or maybe she's thinking a little bit of as a producer and like, well, you know, somebody needs to support Kyle, so I'm going to be the one to do it. Might be a combination of many factors, but I feel like at the end of the day, Dorit's arguments to me make sense. And I absolutely very clearly understand what Bose is saying about Kyle, and this is Bose's first season, what Garcelle is saying about Kyle, what Sutton Strack is saying about Kyle. Like, it really, honestly, it kind of tracks. It just honestly, really, truly kind of tracks. And I have to think a little bit about how this all sort of went down. So Kyle, again, at Chuck E. Cheese, never forget, hashtag never forget, Kyle intentionally read that text to Erica, Garcelle, and Sutton, and then also says definitively that she doesn't want to discuss it with the rest of the group. Why didn't she just tell Dorit? I think she did it because she didn't feel like she wanted to. I feel like she would have, at that point, then sort of may have felt like she was saying, I'm making a concession by telling you this, which I know you might not love that I said. I also kind of feel like the way that Kyle is narrating her behavior to other people, you saw it a little bit in her, was it a FaceTime with Kathy on vacation somewhere I could never afford? Like, she was trying to make Dorit not sound like she was making sense, that she's essentially saying Dorit is making this whole thing weird. She used to love that I was close to PK, and now all of a sudden it's not okay. She's arguing at points until she's not, that this is only about, in the words of Jennifer Tilly, an absolute icon who needs to be a friend of for as long as we can have her. As long as Jennifer Tilly finds this world enjoyable and entertaining for her own purposes, we should be so lucky to have her. In the words of Jennifer Tilly, like, the memes of it all, it's obviously not just about the memes, but it's also in Kyle's mind about it until it's not. It's unfortunate that there were, not unfortunate, I mean, there were moments of connection and honesty that came from places I was surprised by. Garcelle's conversation with Dorit, when Dorit apologized to her for being a dick, and obviously, like, her own weird, not weird, but like her own being triggered and putting her projections onto Garcelle, when Garcelle simply asked her, how are you doing? And Dorit thinking there was like something intentionally negative or potentially manipulative underneath that. The way that Dorit apologized to Garcelle and was like, yeah, I was projecting when you simply asked me how I was doing in the Viper room. Not quite Chuck E. Cheese, but you can only do what you have. And the way that it felt so straightforward and accountable was shocking to me. I literally thought to myself, like, who is this person? Because I think there have been moments, many moments, where Dorit has attempted to apologize in seasons past from like, this isn't real, or it feels manipulative, or it feels half-assed, and she's just like doing it so she can get to the
end of the sentence and then say, and here's how you upset me, which makes my upset toward you completely reasonable in response, even if my doing something to fuck with you happened before the thing that you did to fuck with me. With this, I actually felt like, oh, this is like a real moment now. Like it felt to me, I don't know, accountable and truthful. Garcelle's confessional made me feel like she agreed with that, where she's like, I don't know who the fuck this person is, but it's great to meet her. And then we get into more moments from that Sisterhood Serenity Spa event where I just kind of felt like what's so interesting on Beverly Hills is oftentimes I feel like opinions about events that are happening are often like hugely internalized, where, yeah, maybe we'll get a confessional that's like a little bitchy, but you have to dig for it. And this season, I feel like we have these confessionals and also moments, God forbid, during the season itself, where I feel like people are calling out Kyle for being strategic and manipulative in ways that I completely agree with. And I think the person who by far should get the award for that is Bose. Like Bose in the moment and Garcelle and Sutton are all saying the same thing in different ways, which is Kyle was being strategic with how she shared the text and she's being a little bit manipulative with how she's now losing her mind when people ask her about it. What did Kyle expect to happen? She wanted to share the text on camera with three people who don't include PK's spouse so that they can go back to the group and maybe in a game of telephone or whatever else, talk about it. Or maybe she is new to the show 70,000 seasons in and is just thinking they may or may not talk about it, but at least they'll be on my side. What she was doing was strategic for the purposes of, like, I don't know, her version of alliances on the show. She doesn't have a lot to work with because she doesn't have the Fox Force 5. She doesn't have Teddy Joe Carrot in her corner willing to be her soldier and do whatever the fuck she wants at any given time. She's dealing right now with people who do not owe her absolute devotion and ally, like to be an absolute ally no matter what. Like, she doesn't have the kind of blind alliance that drove so many of us insane because it wasn't interesting, first off, and it also felt like it was just the majority and then everybody else. That's not an entertaining show. We need it to implode from within. So Kyle no longer has the Fox Force. She sort of has, like, an honor. What's an animal that's not a fox? She has whatever fox, not a deer. She has, like, another animal from the wood. That's just not going to fuck with her. And I mean that they are actually going to fuck with her. They're just not going to get in line in the ways that Rinna, God help us, used to. Obviously, Teddy Joe. Who the fuck else was in it? Erica. Who's the fit? Erica, Kyle, Teddy, Rinna. Who's the fifth? I'm so sorry. Oh, Dorit. LOL. Oh my God. Thank God that Dorit is no longer here. But it's just a very different kind of world than Kyle has. And I don't think she is comfortable with that. I think she's used to saying something and people nodding their heads. And thankfully for us, that's no longer the case. Or maybe they're nodding their heads in the short term at Chuck E. Cheese with her. And then with everybody else is like, okay, this doesn't entirely make sense. And I don't understand why Kyle would ever think that sharing a text that she was sending to PK and sharing it while also saying, I do not owe Dorit this. Like, I don't owe it to Dorit to share this text exchange with her husband with her. It's just a wild thing to do. I know that Dorit was trying to needle her as much as possible in the confessionals by saying she's not a girl's girl. It's a question of girl's girl, by saying that literally 1700 times, because that is something that will absolutely come up at the reunion that will piss off Kyle, because she does. She identifies as a girl's girl. She thinks I ultimately absolutely am, with some of her confessional responses about Dorit marriage to PK in line with being a girl's girl. No, it wasn't. I also think saying you're a girl's girl can ultimately be a little bit of a trap, but just that whole kind of construct can be really tough to navigate depending on how it's being used and by whom. But I think that Kyle starts to lose it at the Serenity Spa Sisterhood weekend, Serenity Spa weekend day. She loses it when Bose asks her, you know, why did you share it with some people in the group and not with me? Like, that essentially doesn't make sense. Kyle is trying to say that that question is entirely out of line, somehow insulting. Why would she share it with the group and with, like, the general ensemble? But she shared it with half the cast. She shared it with Erica, Sutton, and Garcelle. That is quite literally three people, none of whom are, say it with me now, Dorit. So Kyle is setting up this kind of environment or example that's obviously strategic, and then loses her fucking mind when someone calls it out. Like, why else would Kyle be upset except that she's actually being challenged? And it's so fascinating because when you think of how Kyle has thought of loyalty, she will lose her shit if someone even so much as whispers something in the middle of Team Kyle and Team, like, Kathy or Kim. She'll lose her mind if you do not have absolute loyalty when in the presence of her oftentimes estranged sisters. And yet in this situation, she cannot understand for the life of her how her loyalty to Dorit or anyone else in the cast, like, why the lack of trust should be questioned in some way. It just doesn't entirely make sense. And then in a confessional, she says that Dorit essentially wins. Like, after she ran off from the spa, Sisterhood weekend, Sisterhood again, says, okay, well, this was all a part of Dorit's master plan to avoid accountability for the things that Kyle says Dorit did in their relationship that was Dorit's fault, which still doesn't make sense. She's still kind of pulling half-assed things out that don't entirely equal what it is that Dorit is saying that Kyle has done, or that Kyle came so hard at her for reasons that she still hasn't been able to entirely explain. And for Kyle to be like, this thing that I introduced, I was the one who referenced this example of a text message to show that I wasn't really having a ongoing relationship with PK, except the message itself is like, I'll keep your secrets. To say that that is something Dorit was doing to be manipulative when Dorit didn't know about it and certainly didn't know the specifics of the text itself, to say that that's somehow Dorit's fault was fascinating, as well as the motives behind what Kyle was actually saying to PK. So I went back to look at this fucking text, which I know has been referenced and quoted in full about 90 times at this point on the show itself. But so her last text to him is something that's like, his last message to her, we can't see, it's been like grayed out. And then she responds with a kind of smiley emoji that I've never used before in a four-leaf clover. So it was some kind of like St. Patty's Day joke or something. And then she says to him, she says she sent this after the separation announcement went out. She says, I know you have a lot of friends, but I am also one, and here if you need me. I've never repeated anything you have shared with me and never would, in parentheses, meaning you can trust me always, in parentheses. We'll keep sending memes, and won't forget laughing emojis. And then she gets into her explanation of what she meant. And I have gone back and forth on this because I was trying to figure out what it was that she was saying while nodding at what Garcelle was saying in her confessionals as to why this doesn't, and what Bose was saying as to why this doesn't really work, like how her reasoning doesn't make sense. So she said that she was speaking in code essentially about production in that quite literally private text message to PK. So she's saying it was about production, that she wouldn't share things, I guess, about PK while filming. And when questioned about why she didn't just say, by Dorit, by Garcelle, by Bose, why didn't you just say, during filming about production. She's saying, because we were actively filming. So then I'm thinking to myself, are you trying to say that you texted him while you were on camera? Because people's response saying, why didn't you include production? It still has gone somewhat unanswered. And I don't know how much of that led to her becoming so flustered because her answers didn't entirely compute. So what are you going to do when you don't have an answer to a question? You're just going to get upset. And then the situation changes to trying to make sense of your answers. It goes from that to like, let's just try to get her calm, or, you know, let's just try to ensure that she's no longer crying or whatever while she's running off. I mean, Garcelle had a pretty good shot, which was, if you're only sharing memes and jokes with PK, well, production likes to laugh too. Like, why aren't you sharing those memes and jokes with production as well? Like, this doesn't, I mean, that was a zesty moment that I certainly appreciated, but what Beau said, I think, was entirely appropriate. The louder Kyle protests, the more I know she's wrong. Like, I think that is entirely correct. Garcelle saying, does it scream she's guilty? Yeah, it does. Like that, I'm nodding my head. And I also felt like Kyle freaking out and saying everyone should be ashamed of themselves was completely nonsensical and manipulative. I felt like her response was a way to deflect and try to create an environment where she was the one who was deserving of an apology or who had been done wrong. Like, if you didn't want people to misinterpret this text, then why not first off share them with Dorit or share them with the ensemble? You intentionally wanted to try to create some sort of little crew for yourself and were the one who brought this to the table. So why is it a big fucking deal if when other people understandably find out and want to try to understand this? I don't know. Like, if she doesn't want to be questioned about it, she shouldn't have shared the text with anyone but Dorit. And also, if you don't think it's a big deal to be texting with PK, but you understand it's upsetting his wife, then just apologize. Like, what's, I know this is like the understatement of the year, but like, why not just fucking say, I'm sorry? Why is that so complicated? She expects it and demands it of other people. Why can't she do it herself? And then we get to the thing that I was like, oh, you took a real leap here. And it's so interesting because, you know, obviously they film these confessionals and you're going through, you know, you see the same outfit one episode, three episodes down, whatever, because they're filling the gaps of what it was what was going on in their interior life. Like, what were they thinking when these things were happening? How to make sense of what they said in this moment when it's not necessarily backed up with other points? How are they responding to someone, you know, being shitty to them if they didn't respond in kind during the scene itself? You're just kind of like threading the needle, making sure the season makes sense, and oftentimes adding in a little extra zest. Dorit shares with her during a moment that they have, just when Kyle comes back to the sisterhood spa weekend, sisterhood again, Dorit is explaining to her how bad her relationship with PK had gotten and like identifies his behavior when he would yell at her, when they would get into really intense fights, as he became the monster. Kyle then went into a confessional, or we shift to a confessional. She's in the same outfit that she's in, I guess understandably so, because, you know, the next episode, she and Dorit are in a better place. She's saying nice things in the confessional. But in this same confessional outfit, she says, or she poses the question, is Dorit taking advantage of this moment to paint a picture of PK because he's not here to defend himself? I'm just saying, I've never seen that. That to me is such a wildly manipulative, just honestly disrespectful, shitty thing to say. Kyle is a grown ass adult. She's, you know, has been married twice. Married to Mauricio for decades, for a long time. She should know better than anyone that people outside of their relationship have no idea, because we still actually honestly don't know what happened that led to their separation. Like, there's so much that she has kept from us, and some of it I'm sure for good reason, that she didn't want it to be on TV, but that would really, you would think, connect to some sort of empathy when someone is saying to you, my husband is different with the public-facing world, including maybe his close friends or mem buddies. He's different with them than he is with me. He's so different with me that I've called it and identified that version of him, someone who's also been struggling with alcohol abuse, alcohol addiction, that he became the monster. And for Kyle to go on a confessional and say two things, number one, first or second off, really, I don't believe it because I didn't see it. And also, is she just lying and using this as an opportunity to say something bad about PK because he can't, because she can, and because he's no longer here to defend himself? Like, that's a wildly shitty thing to say. Either of those things are not good. And to say, I'm just saying I've never seen it, well, I mean, honestly, go fuck yourself. Like, you don't live in their marriage. You don't live in their house, which I think is in foreclosure, is it not? So while their house is still theirs to be in, you're not inside this world. I mean, the irony here of Kyle trying to use the defense of like, well, I know him well and I've never seen it, but I thought you weren't good friends with these people, or at least with Dorit. So how can you argue that her marriage, her feelings and her experiences in her marriage aren't real or valid, or might be an intentional lie or something to detract attention away from what you feel she's done to you because you haven't seen it? Well, you haven't been around there an awful lot, I thought, right? Because you're not really friends with her unless it kind of works for what you're saying. I thought that was a wild, not great moment for Kyle. I think of the things that I haven't loved about Kyle's behavior this season, that kind of rises to the very top for me, because I just thought that was not terribly nice. And also the moment that kind of just created for me just a little extra affection for Dorit was the moment in which Kyle is just really quickly or surely saying, you know, like, we don't talk about, you know, your relationship. PK doesn't talk about you. And Dorit just immediately, matter of fact, very calmly was like, yes, he does. And then she tells us that, no, there was like a specific night when he was talking shit, as was Kyle. And he told me, like, Kyle doesn't expect that PK was honest to Dorit about things that he said to Kyle, or maybe it happened so often, or maybe it didn't. Maybe it happened really infrequently, but there is at least one example of that happening, which I don't think is a huge deal. At that point, these two couples were friends. If Kyle and PK are hanging out and he's talking shit about Dorit, and honestly, no disrespect, there's a lot of shit to talk. Kyle says some stuff too. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. These are just two people venting. The problem for Kyle is that she wasn't honest or transparent about it. The additional problem is, I'm guessing, she didn't expect that they would get separated and that Dorit would be honest about what was going on in their relationship, and also what she believed, her perception of what was going on between Kyle and PK. Like, I don't know. Dorit said some shit too that is going to make the reunion fascinating. I don't know. I could see for Dorit, she might go too hot where it doesn't entirely make sense or feels too performative. It feels like too dramatic. But when she's saying about Kyle, like, I don't think Kyle's being honest to herself. She doesn't know how to be real. She got so used to lying that it's second nature. I mean, that stuff lands. That lands like a bomb. Like, that is going to be something that, you know, Kyle is especially upset about, because I think Kyle prides herself, ironically or not, on being real, being grounded, being the quote unquote girl's girl, that if her close friend or faraway acquaintance is saying this stuff, it's going to piss her the fuck off. And I don't know. I think some of Kyle's reactions here play, like, for Kyle, accountability is this thing that's like 0 to 100. Like, her response back to Dorit is a little bit of a zero-sum game. She's saying to her, instead of just directly apologizing for her behavior, or instead of doing that first, she does the whole thing of like, I love you and your family. You know, I love you and your kids, which is neither here nor there. It's like, yes, we know that you love each other's children, but that's not the conversation. Like, you can still love someone's family and hurt your friend. That doesn't negate any of this. I guess you make the argument that arguably it might make it worse, but I don't even know. I'm actually not making that argument. I'm just saying when you go from 0 to 100 and you're missing that, you know, 1 to 99 here, it makes your responses a little bit tough. And like Sutton is calling it out. Sutton's calling it out in the moment. Although I think Sutton's also just kind of like on a little bit of her own journey in life, her interrupting Dorit, during the most recent episode, that was so wildly awkward. I do think Sutton is awkward. I think I have a little bit of that too. Like sometimes in social situations, you just don't know when exactly to interject. Certainly not at Sutton's level. It's a rare gift, but the way that Sutton interrupted and then just kind of like refused to apologize, it was a little Kyle. Like, I could never imagine Kyle doing that, but the like absolute refusal or almost disgust about apologizing does feel especially Sutton, which is something, I don't know. I think that there was a lot here to unpack and I wanted to take an episode and discuss it. And also that interruption came because Dorit is sharing that Jagger, because this is, you know, Jagger's how old now? Like 8, 9, 10, 37? Like he's a little kid, but he's aware, I'm sure, because of kids and the internet and their parents talking, and it maybe being a small world or whatever, that there was an Instagram post that went up and he has questions about it, about what Dorit and PK were sharing with the world. And is that true? Like, are you getting a divorce? What does that mean for our family? Like, there's a different kind of situation going on Potomac, but some awkwardness there about conversations with the kids, Mia and Gordon not seemingly planned, which is not ideal. But you know, like Mia has Gordon over, they're making cookies with the kids. And then Mia uses that time just to be like, hey, we're getting a divorce. Do you want sprinkles? Not an ideal way to do it. Although I would think I don't have kids. I haven't been married. Pedro Pascal, if you're listening, I'm available for you. I just kind of feel like that has to be difficult. I don't know that there is a perfect way to have that conversation, but I would think if it's a conversation you're sharing with the Bravo community and the universe, ideally there's an introduction at that point to your children, just because while they might not have access to Instagram, their friends might, or their friends' parents might. But it sounds like she handled it the best possible way she could. You know, she said until, you know, Sutton cut her off, like something along the lines of like, we'll always be best friends, or, you know, daddy and I will always be close, or we're always going to be a family. She reassured Jagger as best she could that they will still remain a family unit no matter what happens, which I think is important. And it was also a very big conversation. So wasn't handled the best by Sutton, just being like, off to the beach we go. But I mean, that is in fact Sutton's track. The other moment specific to all things Dorit that I was surprised by, I wonder how the reunion is going to go. Like, is PK going to be there? Is Mauricio going to be there? He's available. Netflix show got canceled. Are the husbands, spouses, plus ones, boyfriends, are they going to attend, or could it just be Mauricio and PK, or maybe just PK? PK has been on the reunion stage before when it has been literally just him during the We Can't Go Back, but like Pantygate era. So I don't know if he's going to participate in the reunion, but this whole thing, the dynamics around the decision to separate and the fact that, according to Dorit, his sponsor, who was, I guess, a family friend of theirs, if I'm remembering the after show correctly, was the person who suggested that they separate. That is, to me, a little bit of a crossing of boundaries in a way that is not appropriate. I would think, I don't know, I guess the decision is up to them, but I don't even know if Dorit had a role in agreeing to that, of like having a conversation where his sponsor would even be there. I would think if a third party was going to be there, it would be Dorit's therapist, if she's still in therapy, or if they're still in, you know, therapy together, that would make more sense. That felt like a wild environment in which to have that conversation, especially if Dorit didn't know that they were having it. And I feel like also, just as I think she said, for the purposes of responsibility, that like PK, it's his marriage at the end of the day. He should be the one to say definitively that he wants to take a break. And I guess they had used the phrase before and kind of thrown it around. But when it came to like that ultimate conversation, I think I need just a little bit more information about how that happened, if he has regrets about how that went down, and God only knows where they're going to go from this. I just, like, instinct, I don't see them getting back together. I don't see Kyle and Mo getting back together. I'm curious how Kyle and Dorit may sort of evolve as the season goes on. The mid-season trailer looked incredible. I am fully seated for that seemingly tense moment between Garcelle and Sutton's mom. That looks terribly interesting. We're getting into a lot of dynamics there and boundary stuff, but also Garcelle wanting to support her friend and maybe her mom not wanting to have that conversation. Maybe not about having the conversation with Garcelle, but like maybe having it on camera. We'll see how all of that goes down. Obviously, Sutton v. Dorit is going to be really intense. And, you know, I know this was an only 3-minute episode, which I quite literally always think it will be when I say it's a mini episode. But I did just kind of want to focus on this because I didn't want time to go away and not really focus on the last two episodes. I just didn't think they had received enough time on AG. So I did just want to spend that time chatting, I guess, just really chatting about Kyle, and am prepping to do the same with Salt Lake City. So more on that to come. Send me your satchels of gold. Let me know your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben Simone, about all things Beverly Hills or Salt Lake or New York or Potomac. I am recording this. It's now like super late on Monday night. I'll be caught up with Potomac by tomorrow. So send me your satchels. I would love to get in a satchel spectacular on the AG Patreon. It's the number one way to support the pod. You get those exclusive bonus episodes, including the two New York satchel spectacular episodes that are up now, that Reading Rainbow, where I unpack all things Uba Glamour interview, a live reaction to the Atlanta trailer, and more. You can find those episodes at patreon.com/AndyScrolls. Slide into my DMs on Instagram at Dame Galley. Include your first name and town. No voice notes, please. But dig in. Like, you know, I love a deep dive satchel. So let me know your thoughts and feels on Kyle or Dorit, anything Beverly Hills related or any of the other franchises. And I'll dig in on an upcoming Patreon episode. And there we are. Just a couple thoughts on Kyle. Okay. I love to talk about her. Love to chat. She would be a dream guest in the Clawfest, because I do genuinely love Kyle. I'm not even saying like Kyle. Like, I love Kyle, but I also have not agreed with a single thing she's done this season, and I want to talk about it. So I would be curious for her reactions. I wonder what her reactions are to the audience's reactions this season, if she's even aware, which she might not be. I don't know how online she is, how cognizant she is. But God help us, the reunion is going to be, I think, kind of incredible, I have to tell you. If I was making a bet now, it's not like I don't care, but like, I'm going to watch the fuck out of it regardless. Because again, this isn't like a season of Beverly Hills for the history books, but it is one that I find interesting. And a lot of the reason for that has to do with Dorit and Kyle. So there we are. Another episode in the books for AG. Let me know your thoughts and feels. Thanks again for listening. And I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.